Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, Europe and the West should promote true democracy and freedom in the Middle East and North Africa. We talk to one Muslim expert from the region. The Vatican's media services team up to offer a series of videos, audio, and written memorials on the venerable Pope John Paul II ahead of his beatification May 1st. We'll tell you more about it. And as part of our series of reflections on the Pope's Lenten message this year, we hear the Gospel reading from the second Sunday of Lent on what Christ's transfiguration on Mount Tabor can mean to us today. Sweeping the Middle East and North Africa, an opportunity for freedom and democracy, or a contribution to even more instability in the region, likely to spread even further. Dr. Mohamed Samak, Secretary General of the Christian Muslim Committee for Dialogue in Beirut, Lebanon, talks with us on that subject today. Dr. Samak is an esteemed Sunni partner in the Christian Muslim Dialogue in the Vatican, and has been a guest at two synods of bishops from the Middle East. Luca Attanasio caught up with him during a recent visit to Rome and asked him for his take on the social upheaval in the Arab world.
If you read or go deep into the slogans of these movements, they are speaking about human rights and about democracy and freedom, and about social problems. We haven't heard any slogan of political dimension. That's why we believe that what is going now in the Middle East and North Africa will change the social fabric and will give open windows for the peoples in these places to rebuild their future. Because so far, these many are rich countries, but their richness did not come to the people, were spent in a wrong way, and for wrong goals, and directed to the wrong direction. It shows how much these people, the Arabs and non-Arabs in the Middle East, Christians and Muslims alike, are feeling that they are losing their future if they don't revolt against these regimes, autocratic regimes. Now the problem is that autocracy in the Middle East and Western interests were two faces of the same coin. Now, it is important that the Europeans as well as the Americans realize that their interest will not be harmed if there is real democracy and real freedom in this part of the world. And if they cooperate with the people, and most importantly, if the Europeans are up to the standard of the values they speak about. These are human values. But when it comes to the Middle East, there is a conflict between implementing these values and protecting the interests of the European interests in the Middle East and North Africa. That's why they believe that the best way to protect Western interests is through autocratic regimes. Now, this notion should be reconsidered now. The West should be pro the people who are changing. And I believe that we are going to have a different Middle East, a better Middle East, and a different Christian-Muslim relations inside the Middle East and all over the world.
Dr. Samak describes his participation in the October Synod of Bishops from the Middle East as a positive and constructive experience.
It was a very good experience. That was my second participation in the Synod. I participated in the Synod about Lebanon in the 1994-95. After the Synod about the Middle East, I believe that it was now the responsibility of the Muslims to respond to what has been decided in the Synod. And what was decided was very constructive and was not well understood within the Islamic circles. And that's why the reaction from the Muslim side was slow. And it was slow because not only there was no full understanding, but because the problems erupted in the Middle East so quickly. And because we realized that it is our responsibility to do something now to go in parallel with the initiative of the Vatican regarding the Synod, we prepared, as you know, the Islamic fatwa concerning the relations between Christians and Muslims based on Islamic doctrine, not only on the Charter of Human Rights or the principles of citizenship, of equal citizenship. This Islamic fatwa is based on Islamic doctrine also, which defines how Christians, according to Islamic perception, should be treated within the Islamic world.
Following his participation at the Synod in the Vatican, Dr. Samak returned to Lebanon and encouraged the then Prime Minister Saad Hariri and Islamic religious leaders there to come up with a common and positive Muslim response to the Synod.
The Prime Minister of Lebanon, the Grand Mufti of Lebanon, both of them contacted religious leaders in the Middle East, the Imam Al-Azhar and the Ministry of Awqaf and the Mufti of Saudi Arabia. They contacted also the Jordanian, Palestinians, and other Muslim or Arabic countries in the region, so that they will have a conference, a religious conference of the Islamic religious references all over the region to issue this Islamic fatwa. And the draft of this fatwa is arranged, is already there, but two reasons are hindering us from implementing this. The first one is the upheavals in the region, and the second is that there is a change of government in Lebanon. The Prime Minister is not anymore in office now. So we are not in a situation to prepare this conference, but we prepared the draft, and it was accepted by all of them, just waiting for the proper time to call them for a meeting and issue. We can do it on Lebanese level, Muslim scholars. But we want to make it Middle Eastern level. And this because we want it to be obligatory to all Muslims all over the world, not only in my country or in the Middle East. This fatwa means all Muslims all over the world. And we have problems, Christian-Muslim problems in Indonesia. We have problems in Nigeria. We have problems in Europe here. So when this fatwa comes from these references, I think it will make a sort of enlighten Muslims to realize that relations with Christians should be based on these principles in the first place.
In March of 2010, Prime Minister Hariri's government passed a motion to make the Feast of the Annunciation a national holiday in Lebanon. The motion was unanimously accepted by the National Unity Government, by Christians, Muslims, and Druze, who all revere Mary as the Blessed Mother of Jesus. Can Mary, who draws Muslims and Christians together in common faith, then, become a kind of bridge for Christians and Muslims in other countries, perhaps even following Lebanon's example?
I have the honor to say that I was behind this initiative. And it was the Prime Minister, Mr. Hariri, who responded quickly and made it officially a national holiday for all Lebanese Christians and Muslims. Now, this is didn't come out of nothing. In Islam, Virgin Mary is very much is considered sacred, the most preferable by God, the preferable and chosen by God. Before she was born, and after she was born, and after she gave birth to Jesus. In the Quran, they speak a lot about Mary and her sacredness and her role. So Muslims consider Mary as a holy symbol, as well as Christians. So in order to find not only national days based on politics or facing the enemy together or whatever, but we have from within our cultures, from within our religions, to find a common bridge of unity. So it was Mary. And when we the law was issued by the government to make it a national day, it was accepted by all Muslims and certainly by all Christians in Lebanon. Now, our aim now is how to Arabize this initiative, just to make it in other Arab countries like Syria, Jordan, Egypt, where Christians and Muslims are living together. And maybe we can do it internationally too. Now, as you know, according to statistics, 1/3 of the 1.5 billion Muslims, 1/3 of them are living in non-Muslim communities in Europe, in America, in Australia, in Canada. So they are living within Christians. So this is a sort of unity between them. Also, Christianity, in the 19th century, Christians, 80% of Christians were in Europe and the Americans. Now 2/3 of Christians are in Asia, Africa, and South America, where Islam is there. So Christians and Muslims are more and more living together, and they have to find ways of bridging between them to live together. This Mary's sacredness and love and respect is a common cultural and religious bridge by which they can come together.
And a warm thanks there to Dr. Mohammed Samak, Secretary General of the Christian Muslim Committee for Dialogue in Beirut. He was interviewed there by my colleague Luca Atanasio. Vatican's media services have been teaming up to offer the faithful mini memorials to Pope John Paul II ahead of the beatification of the late pontiff on May 1st. As Chris Altieri reports, Vatican Radio and the Vatican Television Center, or CTV, have organized a number of initiatives and made available a wide range of documentary material.
A new page has been activated on YouTube this week, dedicated to the Venerable John Paul II ahead of his beatification, scheduled for this coming May 1st. Starting Monday, little by little every day, content will be uploaded to the page, including video clips on the pontificate year by year, other video clips organized by theme, and clips with the Pope's voice in various languages and situations, on trips and in the Vatican. These last are audio recordings supplied and selected by the language programs of Vatican Radio, which have then been mounted onto video by CTV. The audio of the Pope will be in the original language in which it was pronounced, with English language subtitles including the place, the country, the day, month, and year of the event. The dedicated YouTube page will be supplied with video clips of current events and information concerning the days of the beatification as well. To find the page, go to www.youtube.com/JohnPaul2. There is a new Facebook page as well, which has also been activated in view of John Paul II's beatification. For that page, go to www.facebook.com/Vatican.JohnPaul2.
Sappiamo quante persone sono, diciamo, emozionate dall'avvicinarsi della beatificazione di Giovanni Paolo II.
The head of the press office of the Holy See, Jesuit Father Federico Lombardi, told us the Vatican's communications organs have sought to create another way beyond those already available for people to reestablish contact with the figure of John Paul II through the images and the words that were so much loved throughout all the decades of his pontificate. Once again, those addresses are www.youtube.com/JohnPaul2 and www.facebook.com/Vatican.JohnPaul2. I'm Chris Altieri.
In his message for Lent this year, Pope Benedict calls on the faithful to reflect carefully on the gospel readings for the 5 Sundays of Lent. To inspire our listeners in their spiritual preparation for Easter, each week we are offering a reflection on each of those Sunday readings. Well, on Sunday, March 20th, the Church remembers the Transfiguration, here recounted in the Gospel of St. Matthew.
Jesus took Peter, James, and John, his brother, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. And behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them, conversing with him. Then Peter said to Jesus in reply, "Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I will make 3 tents here. One for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, behold, a bright cloud cast a shadow over them. Then from the clouds came a voice that said, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell prostrate and were very much afraid. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Rise, and do not be afraid." And when the disciples raised their eyes, they saw no one else but Jesus alone. As they were coming down from the mountain, Jesus charged them, "Do not tell the vision to anyone until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead."
In In his Lenten message for 2011, Pope Benedict recalled the Gospel of the Transfiguration as a moment when the Lord puts before our eyes the glory of Christ, which anticipates the resurrection and announces the divinization of man. Pope Benedict called this Gospel reading an invitation to take a distance from the noisiness of everyday life in order to immerse oneself in God's presence. He desires to hand down to us each day, he wrote, a word that penetrates the depths of our spirit, where we discern good from evil, reinforcing our will to follow the Lord. Well, I asked Monsignor Anthony Figueredo, an official at the Pontifical Council Cor Unum that issues the Lenten message each year, how are we to reflect on the Transfiguration?
Pope Benedict, in his Lenten message, Tracy, talks about a journey, an itinerary that is set before us. And along this journey, as Jesus was making the journey to Jerusalem, we have stops. And one of these stops is at the Mount of Tabor, this high mountain. I've been there personally. And Jesus wants to take three of his favorite disciples up the mountain with a very specific reason in mind. So often we need to be taken up the mountain. It reminds us when Jesus often prayed in the mountains. He got away from the noisiness, the busyness of life. Because sometimes when we are on the level of our everyday normal activities, it's impossible for us to see the beautiful panorama that God has in store for us. We get so embroiled with the everyday grit, we might say, of our lives, and sometimes that brings us down. I often say that human beings have many back pains because we're constantly looking towards the earth. And in fact, we were made to raise and look up to the heavens, to raise our eyes, to see the beauty. Imagine if someone went around the whole of life always looking down upon the earth and never raised their eyes. They would never see the beauty that God has created in the world. And that's why Jesus takes these three disciples up this high mountain. It reminds us of Moses, who takes up to Mount Sinai Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu in Exodus 24 to give them the law. Now we have Jesus. We're not going to be given the law, but we're going to be given Jesus himself. Pope Benedict talks about this encounter, this personal meeting with Jesus in this time of Lent. And this is what Jesus wants for his three favorite disciples, a personal meeting with him.
Now, you mentioned Moses and being given the law. Can you explain more fully the symbolism we're seeing in this particular gospel, that of the mountain, the prophets, as you said, you mentioned Moses, but also of Elijah, conversing with Jesus, and the light that transfigured Jesus?
Moses is obviously the greatest of all persons for the Jewish people. He's the one who gives the law. The Jewish faith, we can say, is built completely on the law. Elijah is the greatest of all the prophets. He's the one who calls the people to conversion, but also opens up the promises. The prophets open the promises of God to a people greatly persecuted. And so these two figures are very significant for the Jewish people, the lawgiver and the prophets. Jesus is the one who fulfills both the law and all the announcements of the prophets. He himself brings the fulfillment of the law. What is the heart of the law? God is love. Love your neighbor. And this is what Jesus does on the cross in the Passion. What is the heart of the prophets? Repent. Believe the good news, as we ourselves heard on the day of Ash Wednesday. And Jesus himself comes to bring us that possibility to believe the good news. He gives us his Holy Spirit, the risen Spirit, that enables us to give that new law. So what is the significance of Jesus, the transfiguration? He goes up to this high mountain, and Peter, he sees Moses and he sees Elijah, and in his impetuous way, he says, "Lord, it is wonderful for us to be here. Let us stay here." And it's a little bit like us, you know, when everything's going well in our lives, we want to stay put. We want to build three tents and always remain on a high on the mountain. But come some difficulty, come a failure in our life, come bereavement, come a problem in our marriage, come a financial crisis, come sickness, come a disappointment, then we want to run away from the cross, believing that we're going to be completely, our life is going to be taken away in this cross. And for this very reason, it was like Peter, you know, Peter says, "Lord, it is wonderful for us to be here." But remember the other mountain on Calvary, Peter escaped from the cross. He ran away. And so Jesus wants to take Peter, James, and John up this high mountain to give them a glimpse of his resurrection, a glimpse of his glory, a glimpse of what of this paradise, this great panorama that we are called to. And this is exactly the same for us. We need these moments of grace. We need these moments where we really glimpse God's glory in our lives, these memorials, I call them, in our life, of God's goodness, of his love, of his mercy, of his lifting us up. You know, these disciples fall to the ground, and what does Jesus say to them when they fall to the ground? "Rise, do not be afraid." That reminds us of John Paul II, "Do not be afraid." And that's what we need to hear in our lives, in the difficulties we face. "Rise, do not be afraid. Let's go down the mountain and continue the journey. Yes, there is the cross, but what awaits us is this resurrection, that Christ will raise us from the dead. This is what gives us hope in our lives, that Christ is risen. This is the Lenten message," that Pope Benedict says. "We're on a journey towards Easter, where Christ is risen for us." So this light, Tracy, means that we need to be enlightened today in our lives with whatever difficulty, that Jesus is risen. We need to go through the cross, absolutely, but that Jesus is risen, and we will not remain on the cross if we carry this hope in our hearts.
A very warm thanks there to Monsignor Anthony Figueredo, an official at the Pontifical Council Cor Unum, which is also known as the Pope's charity arm. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.